listening to The Edge, everything bass fishing, coming to you worldwide.
What's up?
From Megawin Kill Guard Studios.
Here we go, y'all. We are back for another edition of Bass Edge Radio. That's like 422. Man, I hope you enjoyed our last episode, 421. It was a great show with Ish Monroe. But before I get too deep, I got to give a big shout out to our primary sponsor here at Bass Edge Radio, and that is Megaware Keel Guard. These products that Megaware makes are really intuitive for your boats. The keel guard, obviously, everybody needs a keel guard. If you don't have one, go to keelguard.com. Check out those products. They're absolutely amazing. The other two products that I use on a regular basis are the battery guard. I'm using lithium batteries, and the battery guard really helps protect from that shock and boat rattling as you're bumping through the waves going down. And with those lithium batteries, man, they can be very sensitive. So I love the battery guard to control that shock and keep my battery safe and sound. Then, of course, the skeg guard. Here at Lake Amistad, Lake Slow, I do a lot of shallow fishing. I love shallow fishing, so I always want to keep my skeg protected so that it looks pretty, man. I want to keep my boat pretty. But lastly, the flex step. Man, when I am rigging rods, doing stuff on the road, in and out of my boat on a regular basis quickly, as I mentioned, you know, typically when I'm getting ready for tournaments, I love that flex step. It just helps me get in and out of the boat real quickly. And, you know, those are just some of the primary products I really, really like from Megaware.com. Make sure you go take a peek at those and purchase them up, man. They're supporting Bass Edge Radio, so certainly we want to support them as well. Like I mentioned before, I hope you guys enjoyed the Ish Monroe show that just launched a couple days ago. We launched on Thursday, so we launched that one on Thursday, May the 2nd. Here we are taping another quick episode because we want to do an in-depth tournament recap and in-depth recap with our friend Rich Lindgren, AKA Hella Bass. We're gonna dive really deep into some of the tournament happenings here in April and things that are going to be coming up here in early May. So it should be a lot of fun in this episode. Man, I kind of gave you some brief tidbits on an event that I had last episode at Clear Lake. And man, what a great time I had there with the Juan Bass. I loaded up some photos. I wanted to show you a couple photos, man, because this, I guess, you know, I just kind of want to share with the audience how awesome this was. This was the photo of my 32-pound bag on day two of that event. 32.44, that's me and my AAA angler there, Chris Crawford. What a great guy. And then day three had some more big ones. I mean, Clear Lake is just such a cool place, man. It had some big ones there on day three to help me finish in sixth place overall. And then got the ticket. That is the ticket. That's Billy Egan and myself. Got the ticket to the 2025 Bass Nation National Championship, man. So I am obviously looking forward to that. And should be a whole lot of fun. But I had mentioned some of those things. I wanted to show them to you guys in this episode of the show. And man, I'm looking forward to this tournament recap. I mentioned a lot of the winners and things that have been happening in the professional fishing tournament world, but didn't do our in-depth Bass Edge Radio recap because we had Ish Monroe on. He had been traveling like crazy. Go back, listen to that episode. Ish has caught 2 10-pounders in tournaments this year, doing it his way. Power fishing. So go back and make sure you check out episode 421 with Ish Monroe. As promised, we are going to have our buddy Rich Lindgren here in the studio right after this quick message. You guys stay tuned. We're going to get Rich on the line and we're going to start our in-depth coverage of Bassmaster MLF tournament coverage. It's going to be a fun episode. Y'all stay tuned. Here's some chill close out music. All right, hang tight, y'all. We're gonna be right back. It's gonna be exciting. Woo! Go, Bass Edge Radio coming at ya.
You know the importance of protecting your investments, so choose the protection the pros pick. grinding sand, abrasive rocks, and concrete ramps are no match for our patented technology. The MegaWare Keel Guard is made tough and made to stick. Install it yourself in less than an hour, providing the most dependable, most trusted protection for your boat. Guaranteed for life. Insist on the original Keel Guard the pros have picked for 25 years. MegaWare Keel Guard.
Since 1971, Bass Cap Boats has innovated, persistently thinking outside the box, never abandoning their roots or the commitment to quality through their process. Clearly visible in the new Puma STS, their design and development continues to evolve, improving performance, enhancing the angler's experience, and broadening the appeal of the sport they have dedicated their lives to. Bass Cap Boats. Feel the rush.
So as promised, we got the man, the myth, the legend, the man from just in town, Hellebass. Hellebass, what is up, dude? It's been a few shows since we had you aboard.
Yeah, you've been busy catching them, Kurt.
Man, it has been crazy. You know, we launched a show with Ish Monroe. I mentioned it in the intro on Thursday. Then now we're taping it between now and the launch of this show, which will be Sunday. And dude, I have not taped before the Ish show. I didn't tape a show before since the beginning of April. It's been too long. Like, I'm missing my tournament chats.
Yeah, I've been sneaking them in when I can, my live shows, but they've been hit or miss a little bit and on random times. I know how it feels.
Right. I think it's just a product of spring, mostly, you know, lots going on. I mean, you kind of look at this tournament schedule that's been going on in the month of April, and it's like, good goodness. You got like 6, 7, 8, like legitimately big events that happened during the month. It doesn't even count like some of the, you know, medium AAA events that have been going on. So anyway, let's dive right into it, man. First thing I wanted to hit up with, I kind of got a list to go through here, is Kentucky Lake. That was the MLF Invitational event, and I had mentioned or kind of alluded to just the scope fest the entire MLF Invitationals has been so far this year.
Yeah. I didn't follow super closely to the live coverage. So I guess I know it was mostly smallies, and I know a lot of them were betting on Kentucky Lake.
Yeah.
I don't know how much people were, I assume it was some electronics. I know, like, so this was the same week that they had the Toyotas last year.
Yes.
Same week, right?
Jake Lawrence
and,
won. Yes.
Jake Lawrence won, and actually a buddy of mine, Adam Bartusek, took second from Minnesota.
Okay.
And I know back then Adam was really picking off beds with his 360.
Gotcha.
And I assume
you Northern boys are all in on the Hummingbird 360.
Yeah, it's like you come up to a tournament up here and like 75% of the boats have 360s, but a lot of those boats also have a front facing.
Right.
But you will see some with just a 360.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's so more of a product of our environment with so much grass, I think.
That's a good point. Good point. And, you know, I think, too, it's, you know, Johnson Systems is based up there in Minnesota. So that kind of.
Yeah, Johnson Outdoors. Out of Mankato, yeah. Minnesota. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, they do have a big factory there, and you follow Oklahoma or you follow Alabama. And
yep.
They do a lot of stuff down there, too. But it seems like the northern connection with 360 much stronger and developed a lot quicker in the northern states than it did in the southern states, where I think just the opposite. Once forward facing sonar came out, it was kind of more adopted quickly in the southern states than it was the northern states, and maybe again because more natural lakes in the northern areas, especially where you're from, with a lot of vegetation, not as deep natural lakes like there is in the northeast.
Natural lakes, a lot of vegetation, not much shad. Like, we have almost zero shad in Minnesota outside of the Mississippi River.
Right.
So right. I don't think we get as many of those high floaters in Minnesota.
Great point. So yeah, Kentucky Lake, I was able to watch, and it was dominated with electronics and betting smallies. visually fishing for smallies was not on the ticket other than staring at them on your graph. And the same kind of the same crew kind of rose to the top. The Scoper crew, Drew Gill, Alec Morrison, Dakota Ebear,
did you get a chance? Did you see, were they using more perspective or more traditional mode, or was it a mix?
It was a mix for sure. It was a mix. And I feel like more traditional was, from what I saw, was the basis of it. It wasn't as much as the perspective, like you saw with Scott Martin, I think you're alluding to earlier this year at Okeechobee. Not as much in that realm. And I think it was because they were probably just a little bit deeper and there really wasn't the cleared out areas. They were really focusing on a piece of cover, like a stump. Specifically a stump. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So my
understanding is it pretty much went down in the same exact area that it went in the Toyota the year before. Okay. And there was a big bass college event leading up to the MLF. And it sounds like the college tournament went down. And Adam told me he kind of went away from that area day one, took a risk because he didn't think it would hold up to the pressure. And then he ended up going back in there day two and day three. And literally he wished he would have went there day one, because literally that section of the lake, the wave after wave after wave just kept coming in. So it kind of a testament to how strong the smallies are coming on in Kentucky Lake right now.
So that kind of leads me into my next question. Do you think the smallies have always been that strong and we just weren't adapt to targeting them as well? Or because you would think with the carp, the Asian carp, which filled the volumes of water, hurt the ledge bite, kind of drove the bass, just from a volume of fish perspective, the largemouth decreased significantly in population. Yeah. Do you think those smallies have always been there? It's just a new world at Kentucky Lake.
I mean, the smallies have always been there. I mean, like, there has been a population of smallies for quite some time. But I am not a fisheries biologist, but I did stay in a Holiday Inn this week. But I think what we saw is, right, there was a dip from the largemouth, which I think had to do with tournament pressure, carp, the fall of the grass at Kentucky Lake are probably the three big contributors, right? And then as the carp balanced out, like the carp spiked, right? And they kind of, like everything in nature, right? There's usually when something comes new to a system, it booms and then it kind of balances out, right? But I think what happened is because the grass hasn't come out back as fast, I think the smallmouth just filled that biomass void. Like, we probably just had some springs where maybe the weather and the water levels were more conducive for smallie spawns, and the lack of vegetation. I think the smallies just happened to take advantage of an opportunity and took off. That's my armchair biologist take.
Well, I'm going to take that as a student of your armchair doctoral degree in biology. Man, I agree. I think that, things have just adjusted and now we're seeing a new world of Kentucky Lake. Hopefully they continue to thrive. Hopefully the largemouth come back and we can see a really nice two species fishery for tournaments in the future. I know that Barkley didn't play as well as some had previously expected with the time of year, because Barkley's a more shallow fishery and thought, you could flip and pitch up some greenback, some largemouth over there. But anyway, we're going to keep an eye on that. But that's how Kentucky Lake went down, and our two cents. And the now we have a doctorate degree from Rich Delabass about what went down in Kentucky Lake. All right, let's sling into, this is kind of an interesting one for me. Wanted to talk about Harris Chain. First, I want to talk a little bit about some potential drama at Harris Chain. And, the young angler, leading rookie of the year, Trey McKinney, a lot of talk about how there were some rules violation there, obviously, and he was penalized on one of the days. He was penalized from departure of the dock. I think it was
that was at St. John's, not Harris.
Oh, that was at St. John's. My bad. You're right. That was at St.
John's. It was the lock controversy at Harris Chain.
Lock controversy. Fishing with, yes. So he had two controversies in back-to-back events. Fishing in the lock at the Harris Chain and He was running some no wake areas, potentially maybe speeding. He was running way down in the lower section of St. George, where there are some speed
penalty zones limits
in that zone. Yes, exactly. So interesting to see how that boiled up, and there was some heated conversations at St. John's, directed toward Trey McKinney. And I don't want to, it's competition. He doesn't have to make friends out there, but he's a young guy, very impressionable. I'm sure on tour, it'll be interesting to see how this kind of plays out. But it's interesting to see how a young angler, a rookie angler, is coming in and kind of doing his own thing. Where I think a lot of times in the past, we've generationally seen a different attitude when an elite angler becomes a rookie and starts fishing in that realm, but now it's seems like generationally it's a little different.
Yeah, I don't think people loved KVD his first few years. Like, I think people grew to love him, but I don't think the Tommy Biffles and the Ricky Greens and those kind of guys particularly loved KVD when he came in either.
He fired off feeling. 22 straight checks or something ridiculous. Right. And you're right. I think, is it a jealousy deal?
Yeah, I think it's jealousy. Who is this guy? And I think there's always, when somebody splashes and anybody has a lot of success, there's always some assumptions, or there's talk and, is he playing the same game we're playing? Is it a level playing field? Is everything happening? And there's I don't know anything. I know he's got a great support system that they do everything they definitely can within the rules for sure. To try to make things happen.
I don't think I'm not implying he's a big rule breaker, but
I think that's just where a lot of this and I think there's just a general with the technology and some pros struggling and the way the schedule is rolled out where it's being dominated by front facing sonar a lot outside the Florida swing wasn't so much dominated that way. But coming up to that point, there's just a lot of, and I think there's a lot of anglers that are fearful of where their careers are going and they're kind of lashing out to some degree. I think is part of it.
Great point. One cool thing that Trey was doing at Harris Chain, that was catching monsters or goodens on a glide bait. And we saw JT Tompkins capitalize on a glide bait. I talked to Ish in my last episode about his capitalization on some glide baits. Of course, at Clear Lake, but it's more normal at Clear Lake. But how is this glide bait, the technology, the design, the baits are getting so much better. I think they're going to come into big play at Lake Murray. They're making these glide baits now that you can speed wind them and they run true. How rich are they going to affect tournament bassing throughout the rest of the year? Maybe not as much on smallie tournaments, maybe so on smallie tournaments, but how do you think their entry into tournament bassing is going to play out?
I think we'll see him more. I still don't think we're close. I still think it's unlikely we're going to see somebody win a 4-day event where they catch 20 bass on a glide bait. That seems still a bit out there. But I think I think technology is elevating the glide bait much like it elevated the jerk bait. Mm-hmm. Right? Being able to see how the fish are reacting to your bait and you've been able to play that cat and mouse game with them below the surface, not just in super shallow water where they can potentially see you in the boat. Yep. And I think it's not just so much part of it is during the actual tournament, catching them and being able to see how the fish react. But I think these anglers are getting a lot of reps in tournaments and practice fun fishing. Yeah. And we're getting a better direct feedback loop on what works and what doesn't work for glide baits. So I think anglers that are combining front facing sonar with glide baits in tournaments and out of tournaments are learning so much more about glide baits, and we're getting more glide baits, more tools, just like Hamner and Walters talk about how many jerk baits they carry. Now we're getting anglers carrying dozens and dozens of different glide baits, and they know which one to chop and which one to wide glide and what to do when I need a fast sink and when they're when I'm fishing around stumps or brush or flats or right. That's just all that stuff is coming together.
The biggest key too, is, as you mentioned this, but I want to highlight it. The biggest key is, you know, before we threw glide baits, we'll see a follower. And we went, oh man, there's one. And maybe we throw a follow-up bait or throw another glide bait. But now with four facing, we're able to see the reaction of the fish, play the hella bass quote cat and mouse game with that fish on forward facing sonar to get it to react. So glide baits now with technology of forward facing sonar going to another level. So I agree. I think they're going to become a larger player. Wouldn't be surprised if we saw some smallies, let's say at Champlain, get caught on some glide baits because, you know, they're going there, you know, still in that forward facing sonar zone, obviously. And I just think, you know, once you get to a certain level, especially at Champlain, when weights are real close, man, if you can just try to target a little bit bigger activity of bass following your stuff or on forward facing sonar, just throwing that out there, it's a potential. It's a potential.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's hit up the next thing. Kind of alluded to it a little bit already with the Trey McKinney, but the St. John's River, what a great event. First, going back to Harris Chain, John Garrett, awesome win. Congratulations to him. And he was also a Bass Edge guest not too long ago. We had him on last fall. Go back, listen to the John Garrett episode. He talks about how he made the elites, how his college angling teammates and fishing really help him in the industry, not only with advancing his fishing knowledge, but also within career connections and industry sponsorships. So that was a great conversation with John Garrett we had last fall.
And I think it should be mentioned that he did not really rely much on front-facing sonar for that win.
That is a matter of fact, yes. He utilized it to see if they were there or not, but not necessarily catch them while looking at them.
More the 360 than anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So moving into the St. John's event, Corey Johnston gets the dub. The highlight coming out of this event is Team Johnston, period. Chris and Corey working together to have tremendous success in lots of events in the past and this year specifically. You know, the classic, both of them fished pretty well, made the cut. I know that they worked together closely, obviously, in this St. John's River event. I think it was, reports are that Chris actually located the area first and then it turned kind of Corey into it as well. They worked together, you know, and then, you know, it kind of all matriculated that Corey ended up, you know, catching them really well. And Chris did too. They both made top 12s. So they both kicked butt. But
watching that,
how that team concept comes together.
Yeah, they definitely worked together. But it was obvious watching the last 2 days of live that Corey Johnston could not do anything wrong. I mean, he outfished everybody in the Springs area. You know, even when Chris was in there, when Ari was in there, when Caleb Summerall was in there, when he would go flip the same stretch of pads that Chris Johnston would start the mornings on, and he'd catch. Yeah, I mean, like, it didn't matter. Like, it was crazy. Like, he just, everything he touched turned to bass. Like, it was crazy.
And that's what happens when you win, right? I mean, that's kind of what happens when it's your time, you know?
Right.
They were recently on the Mercer podcast, and Mercer joked, you know, Corey Johnston, the man that won the Elite Series in 3 days, you know, won a 4-day Elite Series event in 3 days, that kind of thing. But he definitely lit it up. But the reason Corey and Chris, great, phenomenal fishermen, and working together really helps them a lot. And they share money and the whole nine yards, brothers to die. So it's pretty cool to watch. I do want to mention the Touring Anglers Association had a special event that Chris Johnston won. Both Chris and Corey fished that one too, and it was a no scope deal, and no live scope in the Touring Anglers Association event. Brand new organization. They had it at Lake Lanier. Chris Johnson won completely sight fishing. It was a fun one to watch. Certainly had some local flavor, but also some national flavor with guys fishing as well. James Watson fished. Of course, you know, he can't fish many other places, so he's got to get his fishing in.
David Williams had a really nice tournament there.
Yeah, David Williams did have a great tournament there and did not sight fish. It was a horny toad and I want to say buzzbait. Or no, horny toad and swim jig. Horny toad and swim jig.
There you go.
Which is classic pre-spawn spawners, you know, attacking those topwater baits.
Classic David Williams is what that is.
Absolutely. I remember he won a FLW Tour event at Smith Lake, throwing a swim jig and a shad spawn along docks. He's from Lake Norman, that North Carolina docky area. That's what those dudes do, and they do it really well. So anyway, I wanted to give a quick shout out for that, obviously. Props to Corey Johnson. Let's see, going down the list, and I heard, have you heard anything about this, Rich? I heard they are going to have another event, a Touring Anglers Association event, but they're considering not banning live scope for that event. What's your thought on that?
I hadn't heard that, so it'd be interesting, because it was, I feel like that's part of why they got so much hype, if they didn't. I know there's a lot of people excited about that, leaving comments on my videos and things like that.
Right.
So I think that would be a weird thing to do. I know I've also heard them talk about actually having a day of practice, you know, still having a big off limits, but you know, some of the people didn't want to go there and put down $5,000 and not be able to practice at all.
Because they, so just to let everybody know, they had a 4-hour ride around. They had a 4-hour ride around. I think it was noon to 4, and then registration was the same day.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Like, and I think it would be very BPT of them to change that radically that fast. And I don't think anybody appreciates that. So I think it would be a bad move, honestly.
I agree.
Whether you like front facing sonar or not, I think to flip flop that quick would be a mistake.
Do you think that if an organization creates a series without forward facing sonar, whether it be, you know, I'm just throwing things out there, Bass or MLF or MPFL or TAA, do you think they immediately draw a group of anglers because they're like, yeah, I'm out with this other stuff?
Yeah, I think you do, but I don't think you draw enough. The only way I could see it, maybe, I mean, I don't think MLF or Bass could do it like in any of their like tiered rights, because you couldn't like go to the opens, not use scope, and then go to the right. Like that would just wouldn't work. Same with like Toyotas or the invitationals. And I don't see him doing it at the top level. I just don't think that's going to happen from a sponsor dollars. I could be totally wrong. So I can see MPFL doing it.
Yeah.
MPFL could do it. Maybe that would make sense. Or I could see Bass doing it as like a Legends tournament, like a Legend series, right? Like a, they could combine that, like they've kind of talked about having that senior circuit.
Legends are now over 40 crowd.
Right. So that could be a natural place for like a Rick Klund and a Matt Heron, you know, guys that might be on their way out anyways, aren't really adapting to technology. And then maybe you bring back, maybe you can get guys like Denny Brower and some of those guys to come back and fish some of these, you know, a really much shorter circuit. Maybe it's like a 4-tournament circuit, Legends, you know, something like that. But otherwise, I don't know. I do think we need some restrictions. I think, you know, an approved equipment list, which is very common in like golf and bowling and things like that. So I think baseball, all that is a natural evolution of actually being a legitimate sport.
Sweet. All right, let's go ahead and talk about another scope and event. Dale Hollow, BBT, none other than Jacob Wheeler took the W. It's the Wheeler Connell show over on the Bass Pro Tour. We will dive in later in our discussions about the current event going on at the BBT, which is Lake Eufaula, which is a non-scoping event right now going on. So you see a whole lot of new names at the top. But up till now, the BBT, similar to the MLF Invitationals, has been a scope fest. And, you know, Connell and Wheeler dominating the whole freaking tour. And I'll throw out Alton Jones Jr. He has become a tremendous player in the scope game as well. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely come along. Those guys are, you know, doing really well for themselves. They were doing well before technology. Yeah. I mean, like, they were doing well before, you know, and I do think to some degree Every Fish Counts lends itself even more. Right. Some of these scoping tournaments, you know, I think on Dale Hollow, because that's what we're kind of talking about. If it would have been a five fish tournament, I think some guys sight fishing and things like that could have hung in the game and at least made it interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you get 1 or 2 6 or 7 pound bites on a bed or something like that on Dale Hollow. Right. Or you can, like, but when guys can just catch 23 pounders, you can't compete.
One of the few I know in the top 10 that did stay shallow and do the flip thing was Poche, Keith, right. Poche doing his strength. So that was good to see. I don't say I was surprised, but it was great to see Britt Myers lead mm-hmm. one day of the group, scoping him up out in the middle. That was cool to see. So there are other guys excelling and getting better and better at the game that it seems like Wheeler and Connell, and now I'm going to throw in Alton Jones Jr. Of course, another fantastic scoper right now is Drew Gill on the BBT. Yep. There's lots of good ones. Matt Becker.
Sheffield.
Sheffield, phenomenal scoper, which oddly enough, not that there's any connection, but he's struggling right now, like Fala. But like I said, we'll talk about that a little bit here in a minute. But yeah, so it was a fun event to watch. I thought Dale Hollow showed out. A lot of fish, a lot of freaking mm-hmm. fish. The Smalley world record smallmouth out of Dale Hollow. I saw Kelly Jordan actually visited the mount. It was kind of cool to see. It was a fish similar to your caption there. Just a thick girth.
Yeah.
Old brownie. So it's cool to see. All right, I tell you what, we are going to take a quick pause, Rich. We're going to take a breath and throw you guys some promotional stuff, but that's the end of the recap. Now we're going to start talking about some current events going on. Y'all stay tuned right here. More Bass Edge Radio coming to you right after this message.
Come on, man, let's roll.
What the?
To catch the fish, you need to be one with the fish.
With PowerPole shallow water anchors, you'll get the ultimate in precision, power, and control, so you can catch more fish. No face paint or phony fins necessary.
Excessive shock and vibration are two leading causes for premature battery failure. Prolong the life of your batteries with the new MegaWare Battery Guard. The Battery Guard sits under your battery and absorbs excessive vibration and bounce, reducing G-Shock by up to 80%. Great for boats or anywhere shock and vibration can damage a battery. The Battery Guard can easily be trimmed to fit virtually any custom shape or battery size. Save money by protecting your batteries. Spend more time on the water and less on maintenance. Find yours at MegaWare.com.
Hey, 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 here we are. We're back. Back with more Bass Edge Radio. Hey, I want to give a shout out to MegaWare on that. You watched that Battery Guard commercial right there. Rich, are you running lithiums? You are running lithiums. So I'm running lithiums. I think it's so important, that Battery Guard, protecting from the shock and your boat bouncing around everywhere. Man, lithiums are pricey. They ain't a cheap investment. So, and they're good for 10 years. You know, they got 10-year warranties, 8-year warranties, 11-year warranties. So their batteries are going to have for a long time. Protect those things. Get them.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to, if you're going to have a battery for 10 years, right, it doesn't hurt to put a few extra bucks in there to make sure they last that 10 years.
Yeah, they're super cheap. They're like retail for about $20. So, yeah, you got 4 batteries, $80. You have them forever. And, I mean, now it's almost like a lifetime. Like, people are taking batteries from their current boats. They sell them, and they take those batteries to their next boat because they got, like, you know, 1500, $3,000, whatever it is, into their battery investment. So it's good. Good thing to have. All right, here we go. Next thing I really want to break down is Elite Series rookies. Man, lots of being talked about the winners. Some of the winners this year, of course, you got Trey McKinney, and you got winners, John Garrett. Who else won? Was it another rookie that won this year? No, you got Corey Johnston. And who won Toledo? Do you remember who won Toledo?
I was
Come on.
Scoping Japanese.
That was Fujita. Fujita. Right. Okay. All right, cool. So here's the deal. Here's the deal, Rich. The worst out of 10 newcomers, the last place newcomer, Logan Parks, 58th place in the AOI of 103. What? In ninth out of those 10, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name.
Tim Doobie. He's the nation guy. Yep.
Yes. 42nd place. Robert G. Now it gets serious, dude. The eighth place rookie of the year standings, sitting 26th in the freaking overall Elite Series AOI standings. Robert G. What? I'm going to just run through the rest of the list right now because it's kind of crazy. John Garrett, 22nd. Ben Milliken, 20th. JT Tompkins, 16th. Wesley Gore, 14th. Kyle Patrick, 11th. Tyler Williams, 4th. Trey McKinney leading the pack. Where have we gone and where are we headed, Rich?
I don't want to say we didn't pretty much say this was going to happen, but we did. I don't know. It was like 2 shows ago. You and I talked about this and I was I think all these guys are going to make the classic.
They're right there, man. I think Doobie is just outside the cut right now.
But most years, if he ended 42nd, he'd be in the classic most years.
Yeah. With
double qualifiers and things like that.
And you'll probably have that. Scott Martin won the Okeechobee Open. So there's a, probability, but I don't know if it's 50-50, 80-20 or whatever at this point, but it's probable that Scott could make the classic out of the elites, which would bump it down another spot. Man, just overall, I don't care if it's scoping, not scoping. This class may be created from that grueling events of open EQ participation now, where they have to go through 9 events. Which reduces the field. Dude, these guys are badass. Straight up.
They're animals. Just, they want it. They put the work in. These are almost all these guys. I mean, obviously not Tim Doobie, but the other 9 guys.
Yeah.
I would guess they're fishing 200 to 250 days a year to make it through the opens. Yeah. And then I think they're carrying that work ethic forward. They went through the gauntlet and they're treating the Elite Series with the same level of respect. And I honestly think a lot of these guys are just outworking some of the guys that have been veterans. I think that's a lot of it. Technology helps it, but I think a lot of it is just putting the work in. They're almost all these guys are pre-practicing every single event, going there 10 days before the off limits, things like that, and putting the work in.
I remember JT Tompkins kind of knew he was in position to qualify last year, and they announced the elite schedule, and he was out practicing already before he finished the opens.
I mean, that is the one kind of gray area, right? Because most of these guys knew they were going to make the elites with about 2 tournaments to go when the schedule came out.
Right.
And like mathematically, they didn't have to do a lot in the last 2 opens.
Right.
But they had technically not qualified for the opens, which means they were not held to the same information standards that the people that were already in the elites. And that's
true.
Part of the schism between some of the veteran elite anglers and the rookies, because they, I know several of them stood up at the first event of the year and called this out and made it very clear that that they were not happy that basically some of these anglers had 30 days to gather information legally about the venues for the elite schedule.
Right.
Now, it wasn't against the rules. It's a gray area. I see both sides of it.
You got some guys, really good anglers down there at the bottom that need to catch them. They got to be above that 70 qualifying. Joey Fuentes, Matt Robertson, John Cruz.
That's what Fuentes is, right? Like, that's just a – right, you go from a guy that won two events – in his rookie year, even though he's not really a rookie. I mean, he was on the FLW on the left for quite some time.
Right.
And clearly knows how to use technology, because the two events that he won last year were almost all scoping fish, probably 100%. And this year he's got the same tools and he's almost dead last, which is just so it's, I mean, and even look at it, it's weird because like the year Welcher, right? The year before he was won AOI, he had a, I don't know, 75, 80, 85, like, you know,
I think it was worse. I think it was in the 90s. Yeah, I think
it was really 90s. Bad. So it's crazy.
A lot of fluctuation. Competition is tough. I mean, you got some of your northern contingency there up your way. Seth Fider sitting in 90th. Bob Downey in 89th.
Bob missed an event due to a child, though. So,
I think he missed a day of an event, right?
No, he missed the entire Harris chain.
Oh, he did. That's a Jones.
He missed a day of the Classic and then the entire Harris event.
That's what it was, one day of the Classic. Right, right. They didn't really talk about why he left. You know why he left?
So yeah, he basically, his wife had a kind of a scare when they were close to the end of the, like, I don't know, not exactly all the details, but like she was getting towards the end. And he raced home from the Classic, thought it was going down, thought everything got under control.
Right.
It was good. He went down to practice for Harris, and then it actually happened in a normal way, a natural way. And he left. They had the baby. And then he basically spent a couple days with mom and the new child, which I understand is healthy and everything's good. And then he booked it down for Harris chain practice and had a pretty decent event. Or St. John's event. He had a good St. John's. He had like a top 12, 15 event.
Yeah. That's awesome. Good for him. I'm glad to hear everything ended up good.
Yeah.
Because there were some, like, what happened to Bob kind of thing, you know. All right, let's roll into the current events going on. You got Eufaula Bass Pro Tour going on right now. Man, I'm going to say super cool to see some new faces on top after a couple days in the Group A and B qualifying rounds. It's apparent not a whole lot of scoping is going on there. so they had, the reason for that is water came up 4 foot. They had like major storms, flooding, that kind of, so a lot of just traditional get after it, figure out how to get some bites. If you're not in an area that's producing, you better move because there's some fish being caught. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of tough. It's a 10 to 15 bite is really good kind of thing going on right now.
Yep.
Three or four bites still keeps you in the hunt. It's tough enough, but it's good to see some new faces in the crowd. Martin Villa winning leading Group B. There was actually a guy from Indiana, and I totally lost his name. I feel like an idiot right now, but a guy from Indiana was leading Group A, who I didn't even
Jason
know.
Vance.
Jason Vance, who I didn't even know was fishing in the BBT. So props to Jason Vance kicking that butt on day one.
One of the guys that kind of got, there was like, what, 3, 4, 5 anglers that got pulled in from the Invitationals last year after there was some departures.
I think he finished 11th or 12th last year in the AOI. So good for him taking advantage.
Drew Gill sitting in fifth after day one in his group. So so Group A, right? It'll be interesting. So Canal's in 10th. He's 1 pound inside the elimination line after day one.
Right.
Wheeler is 30th. He is 8 pounds short of the elimination line at this point. So that's going to happen tomorrow as we're recording this. Pert, does Wheeler or Canal win this event? Yes or no?
Absolutely not.
You're going to say 100% no?
100% not.
Wow. 100% okay. not. I mean, Canal is in position. All he has to do is make the rounds, and then, you know, they zero the weights.
I'm saying the more it stabilizes after this weather system, the shallow water, you know, I'm looking for Takahiro a Takahiro kind of deal, a Greg Vinson kind of deal. I mean, that, you know, Greg probably a long shot, but that kind of thing. I mean, look at Skeet. Skeet's had a rough year. He's in sixth right now in his group.
So you heard, you know, Curtis saying stage four, we will have a first time non-Canel, a non-Ding House winner on the BPT.
Well, yes, that's what I'm saying. I am absolutely saying it. Look at Lefebvre in second place in Group A. Yeah, man, I'm saying Thrift has had a rough year. He's in the top 10 in Group A. Well,
did you watch the first?
Our flipping magician,
we don't even know what they're doing because we couldn't watch them today.
That does suck. But we kind of know because we know these dudes, so right. We kind of know. So, but yeah, it does suck.
Hopefully they're throwing spinnerbaits with like Colorado blades that are like that big around.
Where's cost allocation going when you can see all 3 days of the invitationals, but you can't see the entire event of the BBT? I don't know. If I was a BBTer, I'd be like, hey man, scratch 2 days of the invitationals just so the championship and let's show all of the primary circuit or the top circuit.
Especially now that you got to make the top 10, right? So like your chances of getting TV time, if you're not making that top 10 cut, you're not getting much.
That's exactly right. Which is going to be fun. We're going to watch you follow BBT going. If you're watching this show right now, check out MLF because it is Sunday, the final day of the UFALA BBT event.
In which Kurt says Canel and Wheeler will not be leading when you tune in on Sunday.
That is correct. Well, they could be leading. They will not win. They will not win. But, and no disrespect to Dustin or Jacob. So
after Group A day one, we think Wheeler might be human. That's what we've learned.
Yes, we have. Okay. Bassmaster Open's going on right now. Actually ended yesterday based on, you know, the posting of this podcast. Logan Martin, the fourth EQ event of the year. I talked to Ish, as I mentioned in the last episode that went live Thursday, which is day one of the Bassmaster Open event. He said things were tough, not easy, although Ish has had such a travel schedule, he's only practicing a day and a half for this tournament. So even though he's 19th in the EQ standing, so he's right there. But you know, it's all about current water level and who adapts the fastest on this fishery. That's what all Coosa River impoundments are like. And a lot of times that's why locals do so well. They know how to make those adjustments. But the water's up now, and they're getting a springtime rally. You're going to have some post-spawn fish, but still some pre-spawn and spawners. What's your take on the Bassmaster Open down there in Alabama, Rich?
Yeah, I actually visited one time for one morning, Logan Martin in April. I found it a place that had a lot of bites. The spots are mean. They're fun to catch. Right. I think this water change will potentially bring some largemouth into the mix. Okay. I think it'll be interesting to see because was the elites Logan Martin last year?
Yes, it was.
Right, so that's where Christy caught that.
No, it was Lay Lake. They were on
that. Was that Lay Lake?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Lay. All right. So Logan is a little bit different. Yeah.
The fish live in that system. Logan Martin is maybe a little more spotted bass, but I still think it should mix things up. And I think it has the chance to shuffle the EQs even a little bit with all this change, which will be exciting to see.
I want to bring attention. Go ahead.
Because otherwise, I would really, without this changing weather condition, I would really watch East and Fothergill because Montevello is right on the shores of all those lakes. So, if they didn't get shaken up and he was able to chase the spots, that could have been trouble for guys.
I think we were just channeling right there because where I was going is there was a great article on Bassmaster.com. If you haven't read it, go search it up, check it out. East and Fothergill in fifth place right now in the EQ standings, and Bo Browning in 11th right now in the EQ standings are buds and doing the, you know, bouncing things off. Both of them Montevello's, you know, school attendees. Fothergill still there. I believe Bo is completed his schooling, but those guys working really close together. And then we have another group that's really tight there, and that's Tucker Smith and Tucker is working with, I forget the guy's name, but he's working with another angler that he went to Auburn with that they're really tight. Anyway, we've got to keep an eye on Dakota Ebear. He's second in the EQs. And Cody Meyer, got to give a shout out to Cody, FLW stalwart. Never did so much on MLF, but he's sitting in eighth. Excuse me. All right, so there we go with the Bassmaster Open breakdown. Logan Martin, we'll talk more about that. Our next Bass Edge episode is going to be popping on Thursday, the following Thursday. So you guys look for that. We'll be talking about the Eufaula BBT roundup and the Logan Martin.
And I guess
highlight the Havasu Toyota event will be concluding, as well as Chickamauga.
I should also talk about the Bass Nation qualifier number 3 that's happening in La Crosse, Wisconsin next week.
There you go.
So as you are listening to this episode, I will be day 2 of practice for that event.
This is what you want to look like after that event.
Yeah. I want one of those that says 2024, but
right.
Yes.
You do qualify. That's right. The which is strange that those regional qualifiers go to the 2024 at Grand Lake, but the nation qualifiers from this year that aren't regionals, whether they qualify through the states or they qualify through Juan Bass, which they're not having Western states. That's why all those qualifiers go through the Juan Bass or qualifying for the 2025 championship. So kind of interesting.
So you must be excited to, and you probably got, so you've already qualified due to a nice finish on Clear Lake. So
right.
I don't know. You probably talked about that in your intro.
I did.
But kudos to you for congrats on that. Man. But you basically probably are going to have to wait 4 or 5 more months before you find out where you're going, unless you got some steam.
No, I don't think they're going to let that cat out of the bag. And I'm not going to dig for it because I'm going to have plenty of time to prepare. So we'll be all right. It's a fall event. And if I find out in the fall of 24, what's going to happen in the fall of 25, I'm not going to be in any big rush, but
I think you'll find out, because I assume the 2025 qualifier or national championship will be in November of 2025. You'll probably find out late October, early November, so that you could go pre-practice in the same time of the year, basically 12 months ahead of time. So you might want to just leave some flexibility in your calendar for early November, Kurt. That's my advice.
Great advice, and I'll take it. I'll keep the calendar open. That is actually fantastic advice. Thank you very much. We'll see where it's at and what they do with the dates. I assume they're going to keep it as a fall event, which is an interesting time of year. It's always a little bit more difficult in the fall, a little bit grinder style of events generally, unless they have one up there at your neck of the woods. You go to the Mississippi River in the fall. It might be Katie Bar the door.
Might have to bring your snowsuit if we have the right kind of weather.
Right. Yeah, we don't want to do that. All right, let's go to the final dealio here. Have you checked the Hellebass fantasy fishing stats lately?
I feel like this is, I don't think I've looked, but I'm guessing.
Let's check.
You're leading the witness here to some degree.
Here it is, y'all. Here it is. I threw it up on the screen. This is the overall ranking of my fantasy team right now. I'm in 44th place. I don't even know how many people, 20,000 people.
At least
20,000 people. All right. I'm so proud. I got to pop that up again. I'm in 44th place, 99.9 percentile. Where does that put me in your group? I know I'm maybe 16th. In the top 20. 16th. You got it. I mean,
you have an educated group here. At
your followers are strong, dude. Strong. But, so
yeah, I'm lagging behind at a paltry 97.6% in the 700s.
Okay, well that's freaking good. What do you mean lagging?
Yeah,
it's not lagging.
But when you flash your 44 up there, that's like when you come to the weight, like when you go to the weigh-in bag and you're like, oh, I got 18 pounds, and the guy before you weighs 32, and you're like, oh man, I wish I would have went before him.
Oh goodness, man. All right, so here's what I got for my Bass Edge Nation and the Hellebass crew too. I need some tips for Lake Murray. Dude, this is, you win some big prizes. We're early in the year. Don't get me wrong. I know we are early, but we're early with a shot. We're early with a shot. So leave some comments below. If you've got some ideas on who's going to be, you know, doing really well at the next Elite Series event, Lake Murray, which is going to start when, you know, the next podcast fires off that Thursday. What day is that, Rich? You got a calendar in front of you? It's going to fire off on, there we go. Thursday the 9th. This show live right here, or not live, taped, but airing on May 5th. So Thursday the 9th, that's when we're going to have our next show. So give me some feedback. I'll let you guys know what happened, how I dialed in my groups, how I dialed in my team. And we'll see how it shakes out on Lake Murray Elite Series event. Hopefully we can move from 44 to, you know, somewhere in the 30s would be cool.
Hopefully you don't make a mistake and tragically fall.
I don't want no negative vibes.
Are you gonna like pull out the Margarita Mulator drop shot and play it safe, or are you gonna throw the glide bait in this next event? What's your strategy?
I'm going to set. My strategy has been all year to go with experienced anglers on those bodies of water. The cool thing is these open guys that have qualified this year, you kind of, if you look at the past open schedules, and a lot of them, they're college schedules, you can get a grip on what's going on. So I have gotten, as it is in tournament bass fishing, when you weigh, you know, a big bag, you have some things go your way. I did pick the winner at Harris Chain. I did pick, or excuse me, at St. John's. I did pick Corey Johnson at St. John's.
So. I did pick John Garrett at Harris Chain.
There you go. And that's like bonus points, right? The problem with
relying on the rookies is they're all in the same buckets now.
Well, I picked Kyle Patrick at St. John's, and that didn't go very well. But he was like rolling. So I do also pick some momentum picks.
Mm-hmm.
There's one guy I pick at every event so far. I picked him in every tournament. That's Brian Schmidt. and Brian's not done bad, not done great, but he's been, you know, middle of the road guy. So he's not hurting, and he's helping because he's consistent. So
your bucket C rotation guy.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's the only guy I picked the same every tournament. Everyone else is always jumbled up. All right, Rich. Man, thank you so much for joining us on another episode of Bass Edge Radio. You got any final thoughts for the crew out here listening to the show?
No. Yeah, I just love I'm gonna peek in on the comments to see if I get any sneaky juice. For fantasy fishing, but I've already had my column submitted. My video will be done, and I'll be actually on the cross fishing my butt out by the time that comes out. So,
we'll be rooting for you out there at lacrosse. That's going to be a big thing. All you got to do is go to bassmaster.com, look up the Federation Nation or the Nation qualifier number 3 on the Wisconsin. Is it the Mississippi lacrosse. River?
Mississippi
lacrosse,
River.
Yep. Wisconsin. Thank you very much. I've been there. I don't go enough.
And based on the last BFL,
bite's not going to be firing off yet, is it?
Yeah, it'd be really early. They're, I mean, not saying you can't catch them on a frog, but it won't be a frog bite. Yeah. We are going to be pre-spawn going into the very early stages of the spawn.
Okay.
But the BFL this weekend, my buddy Kevin had 20 and change, and he took 5th.
Wow.
They'd
be biting.
And there were more bags behind him. It took like 18 pounds to catch a check.
They'd be biting. I assume they get out of that current when they're spawning and get in those backwaters. So it kind of stacks them up a little bit. But we won't go into that too much. Good luck out there, dude. Have a bunch of fun. We will see you again on a future episode right here on Bass Edge Radio. You guys, thanks again for being with us. Always love talking, fishing, bassing, Bass Edge Radio. Y'all stick with us. We'll be around again here on Bass Edge very soon. Leave some comments below. Love to hear from you. Y'all take care. Adios.